You may proceed.
May it please the court. Your Honors, in June of 2016, this court told the courts of Missouri that the rule with respect to co-employee liability for the period of time between 2005 and 2012 was the independent duty rule. Did a duty exist at common law? The rule seems pretty clear, but as we've seen in the time that's transpired since this court pronounced the independent duty rule as the applicable rule, there appears to be some confusion. The facts of Evans v. Wilson are pretty simple. They really display the whole fact that when two people work shoulder to shoulder and side by side on a job site, one employee has a duty of care to look for the foreseeable risks and to act within the standard of care so as not to harm his co-employee. When we look at Evans v. Barrett, what we have is we have two equal employees, two laborers, and what they're doing is they're doing their job of building a house. They're moving trusses to the roof of a building that they're building, and one employee is walking alongside a forklift, another employee is operating the forklift. What happens? Something happens to pull the employee who is walking alongside holding something called a tagline. Something happens to pull that employee in front of the forklift. There's something that's happening that there's a risk, and because risks like this can occur, the individual operating the forklift has a duty, a common law duty that exists every time we get in our automobile and operate it, has a common law duty to keep a careful lookout. What happens? There's an individual in front of the forklift driver, just like somebody who drives down the road that has a child run out into the road. That individual, that operator, car, forklift, that operator has the duty to keep that lookout and act in a manner so as not to harm that person. And, Your Honor, you focused on something that's important. These were two equal employees. If we dig our way back into the old common law, it's not the vice principal fellow servant situation. These are just two equal employees doing the job they owe to the employer, doing the details of their work. This is not employees who are on the job seeing one supervisor. This is not the situation, for example, like you had in Badami, where some supervisory employee is probably sitting in an office thinking, wow, do we need safety guards in this machine? I better make sure there's a safety guard in this machine. And I think as we go through the history of the independent duty rule, what we see is when something more comes into the picture, over time, the independent duty rule is obliterated by this something more doctrine.
You think something more is a viable doctrine after Peters and Parr?
No, something more is a viable doctrine after the 2012 amendment to the comp statute, but something more, as interpreted by State X Rel Taylor v. Wallace, I believe this very court gave guidance to us Missouri attorneys that said State X Rel Taylor v. Wallace is inconsistent with the common law independent duty. Now what? The bulldozer down the hill that runs over a fellow employee. That something more case was inconsistent with the independent duty doctrine or the common law duty that exists with two employees that work side by side. Your Honors, I believe it was very telling that in the Peters case, what cases does this court cite with approval as cases that exemplify the independent duty rule? They cite the Marshall case. Somebody jiggles the hose to the jackhammer, causing another employee to trip while walking and carrying the jackhammer. They cite Silcox. Silcox is a driving case. One employee is driving and another employee is disembarking from a vehicle and the driver of the vehicle keeps driving. Because at the common law, someone operating a vehicle, we know they have duties that exist at the common law. We have a jury book that has a whole section, 17, that sets forth those common law duties that exist for all of us relative to operation of a vehicle, keeping a lookout.
Your argument, I take it, applies to your claims of failure to keep a careful lookout and driving too closely. What about your initial claim of lack of proper training and certification? Would that be within the employer's non-delegable duty?
That's why that defendant is dismissed. If we say that there was a duty to train this employee, that would have been the employer's duty. If we say that there was some duty that goes to those five duties of the employer, then, yeah, that would be a non-delegable.
And you're saying it's a jury question as to whether the injury occurred due to a failure of training or to a failure to keep a careful lookout.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And it's not just my opinion. That is what the Eastern District in a recent case determined, is that the court is going to look at the issue of duty as it applies to the defendant in the case. And does this court, as a matter of law, will get hopefully a set of facts that are undisputed so that it can, maybe it will, but based
we can only hope.
So there we try our best. And based upon those facts, they will say, at common law, did this particular employee have a duty so as to act in a manner so that he doesn't injure his coworker? I can't swing my sledgehammer on the job site in a manner where I'm going to conk Mr. Ward on the head with it. That is a duty I enjoy whether we're co-employees or whether the two of us actually just happen to be volunteering our time working with Habitat for Humanity. Now, what I think was so instructive with respect to Bierman v. Violate, that's the Eastern District case from a couple months ago, is the court made two excellent points, Your Honor, which I think you yourself have touched upon. First, the analysis by the court is duty, and it's duty relative to the defendant in the particular case. Secondarily, we in Missouri, we can have more than one cause. We can have contribution to cause, and that causation question is a causation question. It's no longer a duty question. It's a causation question, and that's a question for the jury. So, in Your Honor, I noticed from your questioning, it seemed to me that either you've reached the same conclusion as the Bierman Court, or you're very familiar with the logic of the Bierman Court. The courts, I think, historically have looked at fact situations where two employees of the same rank are working side by side. And I think the Logsdon case, which this court does make reference to in its Peters decision, the Logsdon case is a terrific example where the court talks about how employees for their mutual safety are all necessarily dependent on the care they exercise with respect to one another. Now, when that is a duty that you owe because of the proximity with which you're working to your coworker, your actions may foreseeably injure that coworker. That is a duty that you would owe whether that's your coworker or that's a duty you would owe if that's just your buddy and you and he are working on his house on, you know, over the weekend. But the duty, for example, like in Badami, to ensure that there's a guard on the machine, or the duty to ensure that an employee has safety goggles, those are duties that go to those employers' five non-delegable duties. And those are duties that are traditionally going to be made by some vice principal, some supervisory employee, some managerial employee who isn't working shoulder to shoulder and side by side with the employee in that manner that his actions cause that sort of foreseeable risk. And where I think this court's analysis really starts in this case is with that duty analysis. If we look at, you have two forklift cases coming up back to back here. And in those cases, does this court look at an operator of forklift and say that in every single instance where you are doing the details of your work, you are at the same time discharging your employer's duty to provide a safe workplace? If that were the analysis, Your Honor, then there would be no co-employee liability because all duties would be subsumed in the employer's duty to provide a safe workplace.
And the distinction that Peterson Parr drew is between the methods of work being the duty of the employer and details of the work are and failure to carry them out safely would be a co-employee's responsibility. But is there a fuzzy line between those two, and is there a good way to distinguish where
there,
something
Your
falls?
Honor, I think that, yeah, there's times where there are easy, bright-line cases. And Evans v. Wilson is an easy, bright-line case. You're driving the forklift. You have to watch for people that may come in front of your forklift so you don't run them over. You're putting the truss on the roof. That's an easy, bright-line rule. You're doing the employer's job. Where cases may become more difficult is where there's a particular act that is part of the, where acts, are they part of the normal routine of doing the job? And I believe down in the safety line and warning people of it is part of the normal routine of performing this job. But you may get into an instance where, is there a decision that's so remote from the work being done that day that it is something where the employer is not finishing the project of the day, but globally establishing rules, buying equipment to make the workplace safe in a general sense. Can I articulate a distinct bright line rule? I think this court told us it's not quite that easy in Parr, and the reason it's not quite that easy in Parr is because you have to look at the facts of each individual case, and as you look at those facts, then that court is going to have to decide, were those employees doing the detail of their work, were they doing the job they're paid to do, or were they stepping back from actually doing the details of their work and the everyday work and saying, we're participating in the employer's non-delegable duty to make sure that there's a safe workplace, there are appropriate tools, there's the appropriate number of employees, that the rules that there are rules that apply to this workplace, that employees are warned of risks they don't know about. So I think there is certainly a template available for this court, for every other court, to make the distinction. Is the employee doing his job or her job? That's what the employer pays them to do, to reach the employer's end, to build this building, to fix this power line. Or is this employee not necessarily doing something that furthers the employer's job, but is doing the employer's job itself? Not furthering the employer's business, but actually doing the employer's job of making the workplace safe. I feel like
Thank you.
I was going to say, I feel like it articulated a lot of scenarios where I think the difference is easy and simple to see, but the articulation of the bright line rule, I think this court has done as good a job as can be done. Where I think their confusion was built in, Your Honors, where I think a lot of confusion was built in as these cases made their way through, and after Hansen made a mistake that this court didn't. It tried to come back and harmonize state Etrigal Taylor v. Wallace. It tried to harmonize Nowlin. It tried to harmonize true something more cases with cases that were independent duty cases. Can't be done, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel, good morning. My name is Mike Ward. I'm present on behalf of the respondent, Monty Barrett. This case, the Evans case, I believe falls directly under Peters. It, in two components of the employer's non-delegable duty to the workers in the workplace. It is to see that instrumentalities used by the work are safely used. It is to, and also the non-delegable duty to ensure that there is a suitable number of competent employees. Underlying this claim is the use of a forklift. It's not a motor vehicle. The highest standard of care that is imposed by law for the use of a motor vehicle on public highways is not involved. What was involved is an instrumentality in the workplace, a forklift. And underlying plaintiff's claim, including the summary judgment record, is the fact that Monty Barrett was not a certified forklift operator under OSHA, that he was not certified to operate a forklift. This is a case where Mr. Barrett was acting within the scope and course of his employment. There's no allegation that he deviated from the scope and course of employment, that he was acting according to his employer's instructions in performing the work.
And his employer told him not to keep a careful lookout?
Your Honor, again, there was no instruction by Mr. Wilson, who has been dismissed from the case, not to keep a careful lookout.
And so are you saying that if driving a forklift is part of the job, you can never drive it negligently in a way that would make you liable as a co-employee?
Underlying that would be the fundamental duty of whether or not you have a competent employee operating, a trained and competent employee operating the forklift. And that's the allegation that underlies plaintiff's claim that Mr. Barrett was not OSHA certified.
Why isn't that a jury question as to his lack of training, or it was negligence and specific negligence in driving by him and failing to keep a careful lookout or following too closely?
Your Honor, before getting to the question of breach and causation as the question of duty, right, whose duty is it to provide a competent employee for the workplace? That's the non-delegable duty of the employer to ensure that the operator of the forklift is properly trained and certified.
Yeah, and whether there's a duty is certainly for the court, and Peterson Paul made that really clear. But if there is a duty of one co-employee to another not to operate the forklift negligently, then that becomes, whether they did so, becomes a fact question for the jury, doesn't it?
Your Honor, I would agree with you that if there is a duty owed by Mr. Barrett to Mr. Evans, that would be the breach of that duty would be a fact question.
And so why isn't it for the jury, and you may well explain to me why it's not, but why isn't it for the jury whether that injury was caused by the lack of training or whether it was caused by the failure to keep a careful lookout and follow too closely, or partly by both?
Your Honor, to answer your question, I have to approach it in a number of different ways to try to answer the question fully. One, the summary judgment record is limited. You'll note the summary judgment record is very limited in terms of the undisputed material facts that were submitted to the trial court and also the facts that were raised by the plaintiff in opposition. They focus essentially upon the fact that Mr. Barrett drove the forklift over a rock and that the forklift load that the trusses tipped, and Mr. Evans, who was holding the tag line, which was an effort to stabilize the trusses while they were in movement, with when the load shifted, Mr. Evans was pulled towards the forklift and the accident occurred. That's a risk inherent in the job. It's not, there was a discussion in the prior argument touched upon the notion of transitory risk. And can it be said that this was a transitory risk that flowed solely from Mr. Barrett's conduct, or was it a risk inherent in the activity of operating a forklift at the construction site? Akin to the tipping of the load here, or the trusses, is akin to the dowel baskets in Peters, where the load shifted and the worker was injured. Can it be said that this was a transitory risk where Mr. Evans or Mr. Barrett was solely responsible for the injury? And I'd submit to the court that it is not, that it's part and parcel of the non-double duties of the employer to see that instrumentalities in the workplace are safely used.
But isn't that actually carrying out the details of the job? I mean, the employer has the responsibility to provide the tools, but then how those tools are used, isn't that carrying out the details?
Yes, Your Honor, in one respect, yes, it definitely is. The detail of the work cases, though, and again, years ago, the late Paul Passanenti wrote an article for the Missouri Bar Journal about the Something More Doctrine, where he tried to demonstrate the inconsistencies or how every case turned on its own facts. It was hard to draw a hard and fast rule that something more was something more in one case was not something more in another case. What is occurring here is what is the detail of the work in one case is not the detail of the work in the other case. What is a non-double duty in one case may not be a non-double duty in another case. The workplace accidents are hard cases because they turn on their facts and they turn on how the court addresses the duty and for each question. In trying to reconcile the detail of the work cases, I don't know whether it's possible to draw a hard and fast black letter rule that explains those cases, but in those cases, there always appears to be a deviation by the employee. Like in Bierman decided recently by the Eastern District, there was something was not done properly. The ladder was not set up properly. It was placed in an improper place. In Abbott, the workers were acting outside the scope and course of their employment. In Fowler, there was all sorts of deviations of instructions and guidelines.
And what about Fogarty?
And in Fogarty, again, that's a specific fact. It's where the worker, in terms of operating the forklift, operated in a specific way, where the prongs went up and down and struck the other worker. Here, we have simply Mr. Barrett driving the forklift, operating the forklift, as he and Mr. Evans had done at least five times before this accident, with Mr. Evans holding the tag line, Mr. Barrett driving the forklift. Here, unfortunately, there was a rock. The forklift drove over the rock while being operated by Mr. Barrett. The load shifted, and Mr. Evans was pulled in.
Well, what if he'd driven into a ditch? Would that have been an individual detail of the work by him that for which he could be held liable?
Potentially, Your Honor, it could be. Again, it depends on what was known or unknown. That if it was a very dangerous work site and there were lots of ditches, it would be incumbent on the employer to take precautions to ensure that the work site was sufficiently safe for the operation of forklifts. But if there was
The allegation here is that he failed to keep a careful lookout. See, there was a rock in his path, mm-hmm. and if he'd done so, he could have avoided that. that may or may not be what the jury finds caused the accident. But if it were, why wouldn't that be a breach of an independent duty, a transitory risk created by performing the details of the work?
And that's ultimately the question the court has before it. With the cases we have, the case law we have, that can be characterized as a transitory risk. It can also at the same time be characterized as part of the risk inherent in the workplace that the employer has to ensure that that all risks pertaining to the work is assumed by the employer's duty to provide a safe workplace.
So I'll ask you what I asked your opposing counsel. Mm-hmm. How would you have us define the line between what's the methods of the work and what's the details of the work?
I'm partial to Judge Fisher with the something more doctrine, but I know that that's not the lesson of Peters. If the something more doctrine were still the law or clearly the law, our case, I believe, Your Honor, would be governed by State X Rel Taylor, that simple negligence in operating an instrumentality would not give rise to co-employee liability. And so the something more doctrine, if Taylor were still the law and if Judge Fisher's view, his concurring opinions, were adopted by the court, that would provide the black letter or the demarcation.
So you would ask us to backtrack from Peters and Paul and go back to the Taylor v. Wallace rule?
Your Honor, if I were on the court and I had my say, that would be my vote. That would be how the something more doctrine, I think, was an academic construct or an attempt by judges to try to create a demarcation where a coworker could be liable or not liable. And simple negligence should not be enough to impose a worker to liability, that something more is required. And that's why where you have the detail of the work cases, there, even where you focus on the details of the methods of the work, there's always something more there, whether you call something more or not. It's in terms of were they acting outside the scope and course of employment? Were they violating their supervisor's instructions? Were they doing things that were beyond the pale, like in Marshall, and perhaps I don't know the details in Marshall from the case. Obviously, the worker pulled up the hose and tripped his coworker. That would give rise to a personal duty of care. You have Burns, where you have the supervisor telling the coworker to weld a corroded pressure tank on a cement mixer and then tells, run it till it blows. That's something more. That's something that exposes one worker to a transitory risk that doesn't exist. You have Touchard, where they're jerry-rigging the elevator cables and telling the worker to get involved, and the whole thing falls apart, and he falls and is injured. In terms of the common law history and the transitory risk, is it a question of what's in the workplace? Is it inherent in the workplace the duty to provide, like in Supreme Court's case in Kelso, which was a case that was not subject to the exclusive remedy, but the court at great detail addressed what is a transitory risk. And is it the duty of the employer to provide a safe environment, not only a safe workplace, but an environment that's safe for the worker to perform his job duties or her job duties. And in this case, this is and again, arguing from the standpoint of Mr. Barrett, a safe workplace case. The underlying allegation is that he was not trained to operate the forklift, and it concerns the duties that this court identified in Peters to provide, that the non-legal duties include the providing a suitable number of competent workers to handle the job and to see that instrumentalities used in the workplace are safely used.
I want to go back.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, excuse me. I want to go back to Fogarty for a second. Another Eastern District case,
yes.
Forklift case. Mm-hmm. The Eastern District found that the co-employee was carrying out the details of the work. Mm-hmm. How is that different from the facts of the case that you have?
The nature of the accident, in terms of, again, going back to the distinction of something more, which I know is a questionable route to take, but here there was simply the act of driving. There was no manipulation. There was no movement of the forklift plate. He was simply driving, and whether through inadvertence or failure to pay attention or just because the rock was there, he hit the rock. The load shifted. The facts are different than they are in Fogarty, where there was the manipulation of the forklift, raising the prongs up and down and so forth. There was actually something affirmative, again, something more that was being done in Fogarty that was not done here. There was simply an employee driving the forklift as he was instructed to do in a way that he, in tandem, that he and Mr. Evans had done at least five times before.
Think Fogarty was decided correctly?
Your Honor, I don't know the record as closely as I should in Fogarty, but from the court's decision, I can see what the court had done. I also believe that in terms of this case, the court's decision in Peters, that when instrumentalities are used, that it's the employer's duty to see that instrumentalities are used safely. To that extent, I believe that Fogarty would be decided incorrectly to the extent that this court holds to the view that it's the duty of the employer to see, to ensure that instrumentalities used in the workplace are used safely.
If the court does not accept your invitation to reverse our decisions in Peters and Parr, can you prevail? Can your positions prevail under the law as stated in Peters and Parr?
Yes, Your Honor. It depends on there's a factual record the court has on the summary judgment papers. And ultimately, it comes in a legal question first and foremost, did Mr. Barrett owe a duty to Mr. Evans? If the court concludes that he owes a duty, then the trial court's summary judgment for Mr. Barrett is reversed. But if the court concludes as a matter of law that he did not owe a duty based on the court's reasoning in Peters that the duty of an employer to provide safe, to ensure that instrumentalities in the workplace are used safely, that to provide a sufficient number of competent employees to handle the work, and that the employer, as under Kelso and also in addressing what is a transitory risk, if the court is guided by those authorities, then summary judgment for Mr. Barrett should be affirmed on appeal based on the court's holding in Peters, because at the end of the day, this case is whether or not the employer ensured the safe use of an instrumentality in the workplace and provided a competent worker to perform that task. And for those reasons, if there's no further questions, I do request the court to affirm the trial court's summary judgment for Mr. Barrett.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. The empty chair argument, the sole cause argument by the empty chair, that's a fact argument to a jury about who caused the injury to the plaintiff. The issue of duty is the issue for this court to decide. And the issue that this court has before it, assuming that Peters and Parr, which the court told us 10 months ago was the law, is the law, the issue under Peters and Parr is at the common law, would an individual operating a forklift have a duty, in the Evans case, to keep a lookout for rocks and people who get in front of the forklift so as not to injure those people in the operation of the forklift?
I think we can assume that he had the duty. I think the question under Parr and Peters is whether that duty, in fulfilling that duty, is he acting to fulfill the non-delegable duty of the employer, or is this a duty separate and distinct from those duties?
This is the
It's not whether there was a duty or not. It's what is the source of the duty that he had?
You bet, Your Honor. It's the common law duty to foresee a risk and to act in such a manner as not to cause harm to somebody. And that's why.
So the employer doesn't have a duty to account for the foreseeable negligence of its employees in carrying out their tasks.
The employer can't stop the other than establishing rules, providing the sufficient appropriate number of employees. The employer can do those activities to provide for a safe workplace, but just like in Marshall, the employer couldn't stand right next to the defendant in the case and say, don't jiggle that line. The employer couldn't ride on the back of the forklift and tell Mr. Barrett, hey, look at that rock, look out for that individual who is now in front of your forklift. So the employer's duty is the duty to try to set up a safe workplace. But if the individual employee acts negligently within that workplace, then that individual employee, by acting negligent and violating a duty that exists at the common law, as well as due to the employment relationship, that employee has violated an independent duty. And I think the defense was very candid here. I think the respondent was very candid here. essentially, unless this court wants to reverse itself and move back to something more, to the state expert Taylor v. Wallace, to the Nowlin decision.
You're saying it wasn't the employer's duty to keep a careful look at it. It was the employer's duty to train their employees on how to safely drive and direct them to do so, but in carrying that out, that's the individual employee's fault or not.
Correct, Your Honor. And you make the terrific point that did the employer say, hey, you're not supposed to keep a careful lookout, don't worry about that. No, the employer, the employer's out of this. The individual who would have been acting to do the employer's non-dischargeable duties was dismissed from this case for the very reason brought up by you judges here right now. But thank you, Your Honors. I appreciate it.
Thank you. If either of you referenced any cases that were not cited in your brief, please please send a letter to the court setting out those cases in the cites and also to your counsel.
Sure.
Thank you.